All right. We have Mark Olson's on the phone. Julian's working that out with him, and we'll put him on the air here in just a moment.
All right, we got, let's see, how do we do this?
Oh. Hello.
All right, we have Mark Olson is on the phone now, if we can figure out how to get him on the air.
He should be on.
Hello.
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 Hi, Mark.
Am I on the air?
Yeah. How do we turn him down? He's really loud.
There we go. We got it set.
Okay, hi.
Hello. We're ready.
Okay, awesome. Thanks for calling. Where are you right now, by the way?
Well, where I am, I'm by one of the Great Lakes. I'm by Lake Erie.
Oh.
And we're going to come across the top of New York, because yesterday we came through Kentucky, the middle of Kentucky, and it seems like if I stay off the main interstates, the driving is just a lot smoother.
Yeah, but the tolls are really high in New York. Are you on the toll road?
Well, we're going to go through Buffalo. Is that the toll road?
Yeah, that's the toll road, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's the road.
I'm going to be broke by the time I come there.
Yeah, you will be. It's really expensive.
Between the ticket giveaway and the tolls, I'm going to need somebody to come to my show up there in Portland, Maine. Not Oregon, Portland, Maine, tomorrow night.
Yeah, tomorrow night, one Longfellow
Square,
Portland, Maine. At what time does it start?
I believe we start at 8.
At 8.
That's when the doors will be.
That's really exciting. I mean, it seems exciting to me that you're playing at a venue where it's like, you know, kind of an intimate venue, because you're one of my two top favorite musicians of all time. So, I mean, to me, it's kind of cool that you could, see you perform in such a small venue.
Well, here's the deal with that, is that my wife is European, and I've spent many years performing in Europe. And right now we're working on a record for a German record label called Glitterhouse. I haven't gone around under my own name and played that much in America. Hmm. So it's a challenge for me to go out and play and have people know who I am, because it's like a lot of things in America are brands and trademarks. And the band I was in kind of has a brand, it kind of has a trademark, so people kind of flock to that. I was talking with a guy in Kentucky last night, and he was saying, you know, I started this barbecue business here. It's my own homemade barbecue, and I know it's better than that brand barbecue down the block. But when it comes time for the Kentucky-Alabama football game, everybody tailgates with the brand down the block because they all want to have the same box at the tailgate. They don't want to be caught with one of my white boxes with red lettering. They want the red lettering box with the gold. And so this is a problem. I don't know what to say about it. It's like, I'm sad in my own hometown to see Walmart take and shut all the little businesses, but everyone's known this for a long time, so it's not like it's a big mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the things that I enjoy and feel very fortunate about, that I married a European woman, that I go to towns that have home businesses there. All kinds of little home businesses, and they provide employment for the people in those towns.
Yeah.
Difficult situation. You can't ship all the jobs overseas and all the work overseas. You just can't do it and not expect there to be repercussions. The repercussions in my hometown is drug abuse, alcoholism, and unemployment.
You mean like from...
There's nothing for young people to do. I feel so bad for them. There's no more bands for young people to be in. I'm out here, I'm playing with my wife who plays the djembe, and we're just making a go of it. How can you afford to have a band with a drum kit and hotel rooms and all these things when no one buys records anymore? They just download them for free on the internet.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Tough days, man. They're tough out there. It's a different world out there than I came up in. It was a lot more friendly back then. I don't know, I think the computer told a big lie to everybody, like it was going to make their life better, but I'm not sure it has.
Yeah.
Quality of life better for you, Julian, is it?
Better than in the past?
Than prior to the computer?
No, definitely things got, I mean, I felt like social bonds started breaking apart, definitely, I think.
Oh, yeah, but I'm going to tell you what, people used to talk to one another. I was at the University of Texas. Everybody there was on their computer and texting like they were in their own bubble. I didn't see one person talk to each other on the whole campus.
Yeah.
I walked through the whole campus of the University of Texas. There's 50,000 students there, and not one person talked to one another. They were all texting. It was very bizarre.
Yeah.
I thought, what has happened? I've been out in the desert. I've been, you know, like, I like to collect rocks and fossils and cut stones, and, you know, I'm talking to my neighbors every day. And I landed in the middle of the big cities of America, and they're silent. They're just all texting.
Yeah. Oh, I wanted to ask you, so you're really into rocks.
I love gems and minerals. I've done it since I was a kid.
Like, do you have a favorite one is one thing I was wondering.
What?
Like, if you were a mineral, is there a mineral that you would, you know, would be sort of your mineral?
Yeah, I think so. I think it would be carnelian.
Carnelian. Okay, yeah. Cool.
I kind of like that orange color, sort of.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense.
My wife looks good in orange, by the way. I always tell her that.
Well, that's important.
I do. I say, you look good in orange. It looks good on you. She has kind of reddish, kind of brown hair. And it's real. She looks really good in orange. She, you know, she's Norwegian, but she doesn't really look Norwegian. She looks like from the north of Spain. She has brown eyes and brown hair, so I don't know how that happened.
So is orange your favorite color, or?
No. I don't really have a favorite color. I'm a 50-year-old man, and when you get to be 50,
oh, sorry.
You're not allowed to have a favorite color.
Oh, okay, sorry.
It's sort of like weird, you know? It's like one of those things that happens with age.
Oh, okay. Well, just one random question is, like, what do you like to eat in terms of food?
Okay, in terms of food, when I'm on the road, I like to eat health food because that's all you can do.
Like tofu or what's health?
Anything. Tofu, vegetables, anything that isn't, you know, like processed meat or cheeses or things like that. It's just, you can eat that.
Health food.
When you're, you know, just starting out. But now I have to keep going. And, I, you know, where I live, I never eat out at a restaurant. I have never had anything to eat at a restaurant in
because
my hometown.
Because you cook?
I always eat at home, and I always use Ethiopian spices. Those are my favorite spices.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I was listening.
My wife's father was born in Ethiopia. He's Norwegian. So we were married in Africa.
Wow.
And we're on a German record label, and we're coming to Maine. And I hope people come out to see us because I don't know if they'll ever see us again. And we really sing well together. We're a husband and wife team. And we sing about joyful moments in life. And we sing well together. And my wife plays the kanun, an Armenian instrument, because she was deported for 29 months for being a Norwegian from the state of Minnesota, if you can believe that one, the Norwegians built. So here we come to Maine. And I thank you for doing the interview, Julian. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're really appealing to the people here because international is, I mean, people love anything international up here, it seems like. And I was listening online. You said that Kite of Many Colors is referring to multiculturalism?
Yes, exactly. I mean, because in Norway, where I was staying, my wife taught many Pakistani people and many people from all over the world, Norwegian, because Norway has become a place where people are flocking because of the social equality and education and health care and all these things that we've been talking about and we've been trying to make work for us here. They kind of figured out a while ago. Now, I understand it's difficult for America because it's such a big country to figure all these issues out. But I don't know. I'm a happier man when I'm around people who have many different beliefs and they're openly discussing things. I get very, very uptight when everyone kind of says the same thing. Like,
even,
okay, if you're in a room and everyone says, I like the Minnesota Viking football team. I really like the Vikings. I want to know what the Vikings are doing. I'm going to do what the Vikings are doing. I hate that. I'm sorry to say such.
But how do you feel if you're in a room where everyone thinks the same thing, but they're all like really liberal Democrats who all love multiculturalism? They all love tofu.
I get uptight about that too.
Oh, you do?
Because my aunt loves to argue, and I would not describe my aunt as liberal multiculturalism. I would not describe her that way. But in a way, she is that way, but some of her views aren't really what people hold as those views. I'm talking about, when I mentioned many-colored kite, I'm talking about what came into my life at different parts of my life and said, here's a different way of looking at the world. Here's a different instrument, a different sound, a different food, a different culture, a different agriculture, whatever, in so many levels that can enrich your life instead of being closed off to them. The most important thing to remember as far as being an American is that driving around in a car by yourself all day is very unhealthy. Very unhealthy, physically and mentally, okay?
So you're going insane?
The minute I got out of the country and started walking, my whole life changed. I'm back in the country, I'm driving around, and I don't know what to do anymore. I'm not feeling well, really, to tell you the truth. It's like, wow, you can't sit in a car all day and feel well.
Well, yeah. Is it hard to balance stuff like, you know, going on the road and performing with maybe like having something in your well that you can draw from? Or
yeah, tell me about it. That's the challenge. Julian, you hit the challenge right there. You got to draw. You got to be able to draw. You got to be able to go home. And when you can't go home, that's when the strength comes in. That's when you see what you got inside. How far can you go without going home? And for some people, they go their whole life without going home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of surprised, actually, because you sound like such a Democrat, but based on your music, it's all so home. It's all centered, like, around the home. You know, it all seems, the images are so.
Yeah, I know, because I got this background. I got this crazy background. I have a real interesting background. I had relatives in Africa and things like that, so I haven't been, you know. I've just kept my ears open and learned from people who are older than me. That's how I learned how to play music and how I learned to write and stuff like that. I just kind of listened to the older people and really believed in what they were telling me, you know?
What do you mean believed? Believed what?
I believed in what they were telling me as far as if you wanted to be a writer, you had to work at it. If you wanted to be a musician, you had to work at it. You had to try again. Oh, that isn't so good. Okay, I understand why that isn't so good. Okay, I got to try again.
So you respect your elders.
Yeah. I don't feel like I've really arrived as a musician until these past couple of years, because I was in a sense, I hadn't really found my focus where I was going to put my singing and my songs and my music. I hadn't found it until the last couple of years, and that's why I'm going. That's why I'm getting in a car and driving across the country to play on the East Coast. I feel like I found my music, and I'm going to play it. We'll see if anyone comes, you know. But back then, a lot of people came, but I hadn't found my music yet. That's just like life. That's the absurd existentialism of life. Is when you haven't found it, they come. When you find it, they don't come.
Well, you might just be a little bit ahead of the time.
Oh, you're so nice. I can't believe. Don't try to be nice to me.
No, I'm serious, though. But I agree with what you're saying. That's the reason why you're one of my top two favorite musicians, the other one being Leonard Cohen, is because I feel like your songs, they have like a clear perspective. They feel like they're really coming from right inside of you.
I have a clear perspective. I know exactly what I'm saying. I've worked on every lyric. My uncle was a Woodrow Wilson scholarship poet. My grandma used to basically tell me, you are never going to be a writer unless you figure some things out. So I really got schooled. And then I had a point of view. I wanted to have a point of view about life. Now, it's hard for me to explain that on a radio interview now, but I do really, I am trying to get a message across. And in this day and age, that's difficult. You know, that's difficult, a message that isn't based on sexuality or whatever, or money. Money's the big message. I was listening to National Public Radio, and somebody just put out this band called What's the Fox? They're from Norway, so I'm aware about that. And they're talking about, okay, who's the fox? What noise does the fox make? And it has 20 million hits on YouTube. And the announcers are going, now everyone's going out, and they're going out, and they're getting fox costumes for Halloween. And they're going, do you know what this means? The announcer says. It's a woman working for National Public Radio in America. She goes, I know what that means. It means money. like it was like a bad dream out of some psychotic horror picture from the 1930s starring Bela Lugosi, where she's screaming money, and it's the most important thing in our lives. And look, the fox. Woo, the foxes. That's hit the moment. That's the spark that we all should be a part of. And I just, Julian, at that point, I said, I guess that's it. I guess, I don't know. Leonard Cohen, Bob Dylan, what did it all mean? Did it mean anything? Because the Fox, what that really is talking about is total absurd negativity. Negativity of meaning. They've hit on it. They got it now. They got it right between the eyes. Nothing means anything anymore.
Oh, I see. Negativity, not in the sense of like sad feelings, but negativity in the sense of meaninglessness.
It's a real humdinger, that thing. Nothing means anything. Nothing's important. Just the ability to PR and sell.
Yeah.
Really reach that now. We're at it. We're on the cusp of it. Jump in the swimming pool of negativity, PR, and all these things and swim around in it. My wife's telling me I'm getting too worked up.
No, that's all right.
I've got to go. I'm hyperventilating now. There's a little poodle, and he's barking at me. Oh, my God. I'm going to be run out of this truck stop, Julian.
Oh, gosh. Well, okay.
He's staring at me now. I better get to Maine. I got to get out of Ohio quick.
Yeah, but first, I have some more questions for you.
Okay,
here's what I was thinking, like, what would be the main themes of your music? And the three main ones that came to my mind were, like, plants and trees, yeah. Hopes and dreams, and childhood. What do you think about that?
That's very true. And when I first started to realize that plants and the way things grow were important to me is when they were all taken away from me. I moved to the Mojave Desert 17 years ago, and there was nothing there, nothing that I recognized. And all of a sudden, I started to go into these used bookstores and buy these gardening books. And I would buy these gardening books from the 1930s, How to Start a Garden Center. Super dry reading, but it would have all the names of these plants, like Solomon's Seal. And then I ran across something where it talked about how important the names of these plants were. They meant more than what you think. And you can learn all sorts of things about history, religion, society through the names of some of these plants and how they were named. For instance, the Joshua Tree was named by the Mormons. Of course, it has something to do with their religion and the way they first came across the United States, and they were exiled from other parts of the United States. Just one plant, in that whole region really is the Mormon region, the Southwest. They were the first ones there. They were the first ones that braved it. They went in there and they braved these regions that are totally horrible. The Mojave Desert is an unlivable place. But in some ways, they made it into a livable place. And you can find that all out about the Joshua Tree. Now, if you can find all that out about the Mormons, then every plant is an interesting thing that speaks. The black locust, why do you see black locusts? Because it was a quick grower. People, when they came around, when they homesteaded, they wanted a quick-growing tree. In the desert, the quick-growing tree is the fruitless mulberry. That's what you plant when you want a shade tree real quick. And so it's interesting to me because it wasn't there. And so I would just read these old books. Childhood is huge to me as far as, like, that is where either dreams are made or broken. They're made or broken in your childhood. It's if the dreams are developed by the people that love you, then you're going to go on and you're going to live one kind of life. If the dreams are broken by the people that you love but didn't love you back, then you're going to go on and have a different kind of life.
So I guess your family supported your dreams?
Well, it's no, on both. I experienced both things. That's why I talk about it. I wouldn't be able to talk about it unless I experienced both sides. I had an experience where basically the veil was pulled away from my eyes at one point when I was 13 years old, and I was able to see life more in a way as it really was versus as the people in my community were living it.
What do you mean?
That had to do with my father. My father died, and it was a very horrific death. So I was able to, like, realize, wow, life isn't what we think it is. It's completely something different. And so I walked around that way in this high school for 1 year without anyone talking to me because it was too much of a, what had happened to him was too horrible to mention, really. And so I walked around like living outside of time and space for a year, and then I left. then I had to go. I'd had enough of that. And I went and lived with my grandmother then and finished high school with her. So that's childhood. Prior to that, I'd had a wonderful childhood. So I kind of experienced both sides and was able to understand the importance of it.
Jeez.
Boy, you can take a child and you can nurture it. That child can really become something. And if you bust that child's dreams up, you can have a lifelong drug abuse problem on your hands. You know, I mean, it's just that simple. So what's the next one you were saying was important to me?
Plants, childhood, and hopes and dreams.
Hopes. That's. I don't know what else to say other than I try to live that. Being a musician, you have to live that. I'm always hoping to the next song, hoping to the next album.
But do you ever have times when just like you don't have any more hope left? It's just like there's no light? Or
I've had that. But what happens, the best thing for that is one time I had that and I thought, I'm going to get a job, a real job. I'm tired of this music thing. I'm getting beat up all the time playing music. I'm going to get a real job. So I went down and got a job at the school district, and then they put me in with the problem children. And after about a year working with them, and those kids were really pretty neat, I realized, wow, I want to be a musician again. You know, I ended up like playing music with them in there, and we ended up having a good time. And I realized, okay, when I finish this year, I'm going to go back to being a musician. And that's I made my own Joelle, and then after that, I actually wrote two of the songs on that album with those kids in the classroom, like chanting, you know, we were chanting all together. So that was fun.
So do you have like a song? Let's see, we've been playing the two albums, Salvation Blues and Multicolored Kite. We've been playing those two albums. Do you have like a favorite song from those albums that you think that you listen to the most or you like to sing the most? Or
yeah, okay. Do you have the whole album, Multicolored Kite?
And mine's Look Into the Night, by the way, at the moment. That's my favorite.
I really like, and this is just because I like Mourning Dove, because it's just so straight ahead on Many Colored Kite. That's one of my favorite ones.
Cool.
And then on Salvation Blues, I really like my one book philosophy because it's so crazy. It's like
yeah, that's the craziest song, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's sort of like that's the and I was able to just do that one right off the cuff, and it's just sort of like it's almost like a little theater thing, you know? It's like merging drama and music in a weird way.
That's funny that that's your favorite song.
Yeah, I know. I like the dramatic aspect of it. I also like the fact that I didn't have to work at it very hard. A lot of these other songs I have to spend weeks working on, and that one I didn't.
Oh, really? Because they seem like they just came straight out of your mind like a
no,
dream.
No, I work on them. I work on them. I do. I spend time. So that's the way it is.
Another thing I heard is that I was sort of surprised you don't like George Bush. George what? W. Bush? That's what I read. Is that you don't like George W. Bush?
No, I would have to take that away. I don't want that. We had this. We did this album that was sort of like. It was sort of like, I think people misread that. It was like, there's so much propaganda going on surrounding so many things that we, the Creek Dippers and I, we did like, sort of like a junior B-League propaganda piece, in a way.
Oh, I see.
We felt like the people were so propagandized that we were going to, like, take part in it, too.
I see. Well, how do you feel about, like, political songs in general?
Well, I love them. I love the early political songs. It doesn't seem like anyone can pull it off now anymore. I don't know what's happened. It seems like we've lost the ability.
So what about Neil Young's album?
Because there's no, you know why? Because I don't think you can write a political song unless you really feel like it's going to make an influence. Otherwise, it's not really going to work. And I think people have realized that it doesn't matter. So they don't write them anymore. And if they do write them, it sounds kind of sad. That's what's happened here.
You're saying it has to be kind of inspired.
No. It has to be able to make a difference.
Like they have to have a hope.
I think that the songs of Bob Marley at the time he was writing them, I think they made a difference in people's attitudes in ways. Now maybe someone can come along and write us songs. I mean, I've tried. I don't think I've been successful.
I see.
The thing is that to write a song that's really going to make a difference, I think Blowing in the Wind made a difference. I think people kind of looked at things maybe a little differently at the time. I think some of the political songs in the 60s that were anti-war, I think they made a bit of a difference.
Do you like the song Hurricane by Bob Dylan?
I sure do. I think that, I mean, I don't know that that made a difference. I don't. That's a more specific issue hurricane.
Yeah.
Okay, I can't say that I understand that one as well, or know whether that made a difference. That's a that's really specific. I have to say, I like the song though.
Yeah.
I don't know if I know exactly the issue. Yeah, I don't know the issue well enough to even be critical about it. I don't know it. I don't know that issue well enough.
Or what about someone like Lou Reed, who would bring really specific references into his songs, like naming Giuliani or something like that? How do you feel about that?
Ooh. Well, I gotta say that it is freedom of speech. So I'm glad a few people are exercising it. That's I guess I gotta say about that.
Cool.
I guess it seems I don't know that I want to do that.
Yeah, you're more of a more poetical.
Yeah, I don't know that I want to do that, but I gotta say that at least people can do that. I like the free speech thing. I think we all gotta have free speech. I think that we all do have free speech, but I think the problem is that I think in some ways. Maybe there was a lie that we told ourselves about music, you know, that Boar Dead in Ohio mattered, that Bob Dylan's Blowing in the Wind mattered, or maybe the times they were changed, and now people, that music isn't going to have any sort of social influence anymore. I know that Bob Marley mattered to me. I felt like the things he was talking about were like, were the struggle for peace and God and understanding, and made me look at the world a little bit, but I don't know anymore. I'm a little confused about it all, but I'm still trying to write the songs through the confusion.
Cool. Unfortunately, we almost have no time left, but one quick question I have to ask you is, would you consider yourself more of a meathead or a scholar?
A what?
A meathead or a scholar.
A human being, I think. I don't know about that. I'm not a scholar, obviously.
You're not a scholar.
I didn't graduate from college, but I'm not a meathead because I've read my whole life, and I'm curious. I'm a curious person. I always read. I always look up things. I always try to understand things.
So you're kind of like a savage scholar.
I would say so. That, Julian, you hit it there. That's me, a savage scholar, just going around on my own, looking through dumpsters, trying to pick out old books that nobody else wants to read, and gleaning poetry and ideas and philosophies from them.
Well, awesome.
Cool.
And just to remind everyone that we're talking to Mark Olson from the Jayhawks, of the Jayhawks, right? And he's going to be playing tomorrow in Portland, Maine, at 1...
Longfellow Square.
Longfellow Square. And he has donated 4 tickets to a show to the radio station. So if you...
Yeah.
If you call in and make a donation, you can win those tickets. So
thank you for doing the interview, Julie.
Thank you so much, Mark, for calling. Really
take
appreciate
care.
It.
Thank you too. For the nice questions.
Cheers. Good luck at your show. Bye.
Bye.
All right. And so that was Mark Olson. You're listening to WSCA LP Portsmouth 106.1. And
yep.
Stay tuned for Static.
Bye.
Transmitting. Your right side. Snap that thong. Snap that thong, and we're